Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 3rd, 2016. The South Sudan government says it is ready to welcome a regional protection force to Juba.
And the council issued very strong policy directive. Security sectors that are concerned with the implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 2304 and the communique that we signed jointly to immediately move to implement the recommendations of our technical team that met with UNMISS.
And South Sudanese community leaders in the diaspora say the government in Juba talks too much without some concrete action towards peace.
In one hand, they say they're talking about peace. In another hand, they talk about the wage war. So how will you compare those things together to match that you are really a man of peace?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government has accepted the deployment of a regional protection force. South Sudan's Minister for Cabinet Affairs says government institutions have been told to cooperate with the United Nations in preparation for the deployment of the additional 4,000 troops. A political analyst says the government's new stand should improve Juba's image. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomoro says they are waiting for the arrival of the Regional Protection Force. Lomoro says all government institutions will cooperate with UNMISS.
And the council issued very strong policy directive and orders to all the government agencies and especially those security sectors that are concerned with the implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 2304 and the communique that we signed jointly to immediately move to implement the recommendations of our technical team that met with UNMISS without failure and without delay.
Lomoro did not specify when the government expects the protection forces to arrive in the country, but says the government will help accompany in a smooth operation of the new peacekeeping forces, including their patrol and the clearance of goods and equipment that belong to the peacekeeping troops.
These include issues of deployment and security arrangement for Juba, the protection of civilians, Juba International Airport, and other key installations as agreed between our technical team and the UNMISS technical team.
Lomoro says once the technical team is ready and all arrangements have been completed, the government will inform the UN it is ready for the protection force to arrive in the country. It is not clear what prompted the government to change its position on the deployment of the regional protection force. Jacob Chol, head of the Political Science Department at the University of Juba, says the government's decision to agree without conditions will help improve the already tainted image of the government after earlier refusal to allow the deployment of the regional force in July.
The government seeing itself not really with the international community, and the government seeing itself, well, it is a time to clean its image and to be able to really live within what the internal community said.
Joel says the government is taking advantage of recent remarks by American officials discouraging rebel leader Riek Machar from taking up an armed resistance against Juba.
One of the ways is that the government realized that the United States, which is leading the international community, has basically told Riek perhaps to leave the rebellion, play a non-violent approach, and perhaps stay out of South Sudanese politics. And this perhaps could be what has prevented the government to agree on regional protection force in practice now. But overwhelmingly, the government seems to that accepting regional protection force will be able now to allow it now to be respected and given support by the international community.
Charles says accepting the regional force will enable the government to gain respect from the international community on which it relies on humanitarian and financial support. But Charles warns the protection force will not be able to completely end the fighting in South Sudan.
The coming of regional protection force is being viewed as if it is coming to stop violence in South Sudan. It's not going to stop violence as such entirety. It's just going to help to be able to protect critical installations.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to the UN Peacekeeping Department in New York, but was told to contact the department later for comments on the timing of the arrival of the regional force in Juba. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Civil society activists are pleading with gunmen to stop attacking civilians along the road in Imatong State after two children were killed on a highway near Torit last Friday. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
Police in Torit said two children were killed and five other passengers were injured when an armed group attacked a commercial truck at Ido on the Torit-Magui Road on Friday. Eyewitnesses say one child was shot dead during the attack as armed men opened fire on a truck carrying food and passengers. The driver of the truck says a girl was shot and killed at the scene, while another child shot by the gunman later died. Speaking in Arabic, George Pasquale said the attackers were looking for money and other personal belongings of value.
My town boy was wounded on the leg and hand, so I cannot leave him. The attackers came and took me and the town boy to the bush and checked my pockets. They found nothing but took my belt. They checked the town boy and got 600 SSP. There then, they told me to carry all the wounded to the hospital. And I did so, but many people ran to the bushes and I don't know their situation.
Women activists in Torit have condemned the killing of children and innocent civilians on the roads across South Sudan. They are calling on armed groups in Imatong State and elsewhere in South Sudan to stop the unnecessary killing of children and innocent civilians. Police in Torit say they are still investigating the circumstance behind the Magui Road attack. Major Jeremiah Fadiri is the police chief inspector in Torit. He says this is the second time that children were killed by an armed group in a road attack. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, he says the police is doing everything to protect civilians. We have sent police team with two cars, and up to now, they are still at the scene, he said. No suspects have been arrested in connection with the attack. Hospital authorities have confirmed they are treating five patients who were passengers in the truck but did not elaborate on their injuries. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
The United Nations is warning the lives of tens of thousands of refugees fleeing war and persecution are at risk from growing xenophobia. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the site of the annual UNHCR Refugee Conference.
The most recent figures put the number of refugees and internally displaced people at more than 65 million. UN Refugee Chief Filippo Grandi says the gravest displacement crisis continues to be generated in Syria.
We have run out of words to describe the death, destruction, and suffering willingly inflicted on civilians by the parties to that conflict, while states with the power to stop the war are simply unable to find the unity of intent required to do so.
The exodus of people from Syria has created the biggest refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. While praising Austria, Germany, and Sweden for receiving large numbers of refugees, Grandi denounces other European countries for closing their borders to those from Syria and other countries, making a chaotic situation even worse. He says the right to asylum is being undermined by xenophobia, as well as nationalistic and political rhetoric intent on linking refugees with security concerns and terrorism.
The arrival of large numbers of refugees and migrants has created panic and political instability in the global north, fueled by irresponsible politicians. Restrictions in the laws governing asylum are being enforced in many countries, even among those with a proud tradition of refugee protection and human rights.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon told delegates at the conference he is outraged by the bitter injustice of war.
The situation in Syria is one of the most dramatic and tragic in the world. And we must also remember the millions of other refugees from Yemen, Afghanistan, Burundi, Central African Republic, South Sudan, and beyond. More than six decades ago.
Ban says the world has a responsibility to confront the reality of the staggering numbers of men, women, and children being killed and wounded by war. He says if there is a will and compassionate leadership, the problem of war and forcible displacement can be solved. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, in Washington here, South Sudanese who took refuge in the United States continue to watch helplessly as the transitional government of national unity is barely holding together while the country struggles with insecurity, widespread malnutrition, lack of health services. About 80 people in the diaspora gathered over the weekend here in Washington to ask a delegation headed by South Sudan's first Vice President Taban Dengai some pointed question about the fate of their country. Ayen Bior was there and has this report.
The first Vice President's core message was that the transitional government of national unity is committed to implementing the peace deal and is on track to building the infrastructures and institutions necessary to build the country. John Woi Leek, a South Sudanese community leader in the Washington metropolitan area, is skeptical about Deng's assurances, saying many people in the United States and abroad are still loyal to Deng's former boss, Riek Machar.
The question is now, what is General Taban willing to do to bring on board people that are diehard supporters of Dr. Riek? That's one thing. Two, there is also an allegation, or at least there is an evidence that is showing that Taban Dengai may not have support on the ground.
During his weekend address to the diaspora, Deng urged South Sudanese not to incite hate or controversy on the internet and advised people not to take to social media to attack communities in South Sudan. Leek says he agrees with that message, but also reminded Deng that the diaspora has worked tirelessly over the last decade to bring independence and development to their home country, something that has not happened.
The diaspora has been the one that was advocating for the CPA to happen. There is no point for us 16 years later on, 15 years later on, that we'll come back and sell the country. We work on our own. We're all making our living. I work as an auditor. I don't have to sell a country to get a dime. So that notion is wrong.
Leek says members of the community have spoken to lawmakers in the U.S. to try to impose an arms embargo in South Sudan and have advocated for a new bill that will potentially send South Sudanese back home to help rebuild the country. But he says for many like him, their work doesn't seem to make a difference, leaving them frustrated. Reverend Samuel Taban, who leads a South Sudanese congregation in Falls Church, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., says he's fed up with leaders who preach peace while at the same time urge their sympathizers to wage war. While offering a prayer during the meeting with the first vice president, Reverend Taban took a moment to read from the Sermon of the Mount in the Bible's Book of Matthew, which says, "Blessed are the peacemakers."
Yeah, okay, our leaders talk about peace, right? What kind of peace are they talking about? Here, in one hand, as I give an example there, in one hand, they say they're talking about peace. In another hand, they talk about the wage war. So how will you compare those things together to match that you are really a man of peace? So in another way, we are somehow deceiving probably ourselves because we are not really sincere to ourselves. Our governments and leaders are not sincere to themselves. What they're saying is not true, you know, because they say another thing, they do another thing. That's why I believe them. They're not really true leaders who could say a true thing, and they're not really concerned about our people.
Despite his skepticism, Reverend Taban says he remains hopeful that the first vice president will deliver on his promises to stop the violence in South Sudan. But he notes that South Sudanese are going to need more than empty promises from politicians to believe that real change is possible. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a protest in Ethiopia turns deadly. Find out more when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would your friends and family describe you?
I'm different into different people. One thing they will say about me is that I go out of my way to satisfy people. Mostly my family members knows that.
As a funny person, I think, yeah. Because, I like to tell funny stories. And I'm a funny person. Find myself funny sometimes because I even laugh at myself.
Most of my friends think I'm crazy, yeah. Even my family, they be like, I'm crazy.
My family, I think, would describe me as a stubborn boy, yeah, but now I think I'm growing old. They're starting to appreciate me more. They're starting telling me the way they see me, you know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Ethiopians began observing 3 days of mourning today, one day after a celebration known as Erecha, marking the end of the rainy season, left at least 52 people dead in the restive Oromia region. The trouble happened during a police confrontation with anti-government protesters, and as Jill Craig reports, the region has seen deadly anti-government protests for close to a year.
The festivities in the town of Bishoftu took an ominous tone when police used force to disperse protesters, thousands of whom were chanting against the government. According to witnesses, some demonstrators were trying to remove an Ethiopian flag from a stage when police began beating demonstrators and fired tear gas and warning shots. Panic led to a deadly stampede. Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn denied that government forces used live rounds and said some people in the crowd intended to cause chaos. Elise Dufieff is the research and monitoring manager for aid transparency group Publish What You Fund. Dufieff's PhD focused on Ethiopia.
3 days of mourning have been announced, but there's been no dialogue. It's really just like sending the army or sending the police, putting people in jail. Deciding 3 days of mourning, and then we move on.
Human Rights Watch notes that tens of thousands of people have been arrested since November 2015, when protests in Oromia began over a government plan to annex parts of it to Addis Ababa, the capital city. Felix Horn, senior researcher on the Horn of Africa for Human Rights Watch, says these arrests are a problem.
Whenever there's a major event in Oromia, whenever there's abuses by security forces, everyone focuses on the killings. And the beatings, and rightfully so. But one thing that doesn't get a lot of attention is in the days after these protests or events like Erecha, there are large-scale arrests. We've been hearing today about some of the arrests that took place last night. It just continues to be a problem across Oromia.
Allowing people the right to express their concerns is key, according to Horn.
Well, I think it's clear that the government, the security force response to all of the protests in Oromia has been one of just using brutal force. And that not only did not work, it just actually makes the situation worse and guarantees future protests. It emboldens the protesters that are out there. So the government needs to change course, and it needs to begin looking at the very valid grievances of the protests.
In August, protests in Oromia and the Amhara region left dozens dead and hundreds injured. Opposition parties accused government security forces of opening fire on unarmed peaceful demonstrators, while the government said some of them were carrying lethal weapons like explosives and organizing unauthorized protests by forces of violence. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Members of the world's largest conservation treaty, CITES, on Monday struck down proposal to allow legal sales of some elephant ivory and rhino horn. Both sides of the argument try to paint this as a clear-cut issue, but as experts at this massive conference explain, it is complicated. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
The deliberations were long, debate was impassioned, and votes were decisive.
On Monday, members of the Convention on Illegal Trade and Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora killed proposals to legalize trade in elephant ivory and rhino horn. It was the key issue at this year's conference in Johannesburg, and one that experts say isn't as simple as the opposing campaigns made it seem. Nations with the world's largest elephant and rhino populations, among them Zimbabwe and Swaziland, argued that legal trade in these banned animal products will bring much-needed funds for conservation. The most visible opponents of this idea appealed to the heart, and as the conference began last week, hundreds of campaigners marched against the proposals, passionately calling for protection for these iconic, beloved creatures. Elephant and rhino expert Tom Milliken says love has little to do with this issue. Money matters, too. He says his organization, Traffic, sides with the majority in its decision to not allow legal sales for now.
But we are entirely sympathetic to the motivation that Swaziland has to leverage finance. And this is the rub here, that if the global community is expecting that there will be rhinos in Africa, elephants in Africa, in perpetuity, who is going to pay for that to happen? Because the finance is just not available. And the more we foreclose on the avenues of realizing finance that Africans themselves can do, sustainable utilization of resources, trade, sport hunting, these sorts of things, and we're not replacing it with other tools in a toolbox, these are countries that are cash-strapped.
The populations of these animals are equally vulnerable. The International Union for Conservation of Nature revealed that the African elephant population has dropped by about 111,000 in the last decade, the worst decline in a quarter century. Earlier this year, the IUCN reported that rhino poaching has increased for the sixth consecutive year. Jan Creamer, president of Animal Defenders International, says her group unequivocally supports banning all trade in ivory and rhino. Her argument appeals to emotion and, she says, human decency.
Human beings have to find a way to live alongside the other species that share our planet and to respect and preserve them and do the best we can to give them space to live. We don't agree with exploitation of animals for their body parts. The stories that we've heard from the people like the rangers here at this conference are heartbreaking. These animals are being driven to extinction.
The other side is equally passionate. Tanya Jacobson is a surprising advocate in favor of rhino horn sales. For starters, she's a vegetarian for ethical reasons. She works with the South Africa-based Rhino Alive campaign, which, as its name indicates, wants to harvest rhino horn without killing the animals.
Our feeling is that rhino horn is a sustainable product. It can be removed from a rhino humanely without causing any harm at all to rhinos. And based on this and based on the fact that rhino horn regrows at a rate of about 1 to 2 kilograms per year, we strongly feel that instead of having a situation where we're facing huge poaching dilemmas, that there is a sustainable conservation-based solution to the crisis.
These two species, Milliken says, come up at every CITES conference. As long as there are elephants and rhinos on this earth, the one thing everyone at this conference agrees on, they will be discussed. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister says the country will allow the deployment of a regional UN protection force. South Sudan's Cabinet Affairs Minister says the government has directed its institutions to cooperate with the UN in preparation for the deployment of 4,000 additional troops. Minister Martin Ilia Lamoro didn't specify when the government expects those forces to arrive in the country, but he says the government will help usher in a smooth operation of the new forces, including their patrols and the clearance of goods and equipment. Lamoro says once the technical team is ready and all arrangements have been completed, the government will inform the UN that it's ready for the protection force to arrive. Jacob Chole, the head of the Political Science Department at the University of Juba, says the government's decision to agree without conditions will brighten the image of the government after earlier refusing to allow the force to come inside the country. Chole says the government is taking advantage of recent remarks by American officials discouraging rebel leader Riek Machar from taking up an armed resistance against Juba. Unity is barely holding it together while the country struggles with insecurity, widespread malnutrition, and lack of health services in the state. About 80 people in diaspora gathered over the weekend here in Washington to ask a delegation headed by South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, some pointed questions about the fate of their country. The first vice president's core message was that the transitional government of national unity is committed to implementing the peace deal and on track to build the country's infrastructure. John Woi Leek, a South Sudanese community leader in the Washington area, is skeptical about Deng's assurances. He says many of the people in the United States and abroad are still loyal to Deng's former boss, Riek Machar. During his weekend address to the diaspora, Deng urged South Sudanese not to incite hate or controversy on the internet and advised people not to take to social media to attack communities in South Sudan. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Russ Corby.
Just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today. They're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide. Not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world? That love. So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way. They need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on his own. We were created in the image and the likeness of Jah. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun now. And even times the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat. Can't you tell me how much love you have for this world and creator? Take a look, all of the children on the street. They're standing as the future generation. Don't leave them on their own. Who's gonna be in the future? Stand up. Don't let them hold you. Stand up. Rise about yourself, stand up, give them love, stand up for the future generation. I, oh, nah. I, oh, no more war.
We've been listening to South Sudanese reggae king Russ Corby with the song No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. No more wars in Asia. Oh, no.